Good morning.
Good morning.
So I have a message I'm actually very excited to share with you guys today. I may even get a little teary, so I apologize for that up front. So two things: when I get excited, I tend to get loud, so Si, you got to watch the volume, all right? And I tend to be like that kid. The kid that you hand a plate to, he's got a lot of food on the plate. What's the first thing he goes to? He goes to his favorite dish. So I'm just like that. I want to get to the favorite point, so I've made a slide deck. Now, full disclosure, I made this slide deck really quickly, mainly to slow me down. I didn't find out I was doing this sermon until yesterday. So I'm going to give you a bit of irony, and then I'm going to move on. Ooh. First, I'm going to pick up my sermon so I don't ramble. So yesterday, got done with my taxes, and I'm not going to say exactly how I felt, but not great. And immediately after I saw how much I was going to pay, bing, comes a text message from Brian. Hey, Steve, would you mind filling in for me? So put that in the back of your mind, because it doesn't sound ironic yet. But when I start teaching this lesson, you're going to see I needed this lesson last night. And it came in handy, I'm here to tell you. So last week, some of us gentlemen, we went to the Carolina Men's Fellowship. I want to tell you, it was a very uplifting experience. It was a very exciting experience. It was very spiritual. Gentlemen, if you get a chance to go next year, I strongly encourage it. Make sure you set aside some time and make that trip. It really was a blessing. But while I was there, they had some gentlemen down in the basement who were selling wares, selling Bibles and books and tracts. And one of the things I saw that I really liked was a nice leather-bound daily devotional for men. So I picked that up. It wasn't terribly expensive. And a little devotional every now and then doesn't hurt. And I'll tell you the truth, I was thinking about Wednesdays. I think maybe I could glean something from this I could use on Wednesdays. I'm here to tell you, I haven't made it past the first devotional. And the reason isn't because it wasn't a good devotional. The reason is it was too good of a devotional. I've been meditating on it ever since I read it. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 6 through 7. So if you need a lesson title, we're going to call it Be Humble. And no, that does not match what's in your bulletin. I printed the bulletin before I found out I was going to be teaching today or talking today. So 1 Peter 5, 6 through 7. So I memorized this because I thought it was very interesting. Verse 6 is the verse that the devotional writer focused on. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you. Now, not surprisingly, the author really focused on the idea of putting pride behind you. Because pride is that thing that gets in our way, right? I mean, if you look at, there are many places in the Bible where it actually talks about pride and the problem with pride. Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. That's Proverbs 16:18. Also in Proverbs, when wisdom is speaking, okay, that was me last night before I did my taxes. Wisdom says, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance and the evil way and the perverse mouth I hate. So the idea that pride is a stumbling block for us is not really a stretch, is it? It really isn't. It's pretty much low-hanging fruit. And Peter does say in verse 5, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So he is talking about pride here. He is talking about you've got to put your pride behind you so that God can exalt you. And I was wondering to myself, why? What is going on with these Christians? And keep in mind, the Christians he's writing to, these were Christians who were dispersed. And if you remember, there was a reason they were dispersed. They were being persecuted. And that just didn't, that didn't quite gel with me. Because these people, if they're so persecuted, why do they have so much pride? Why are they so haughty? Because I've been, well, maybe not persecuted for being a Christian, but I've been set upon. I've been made the focus of ridicule, right? And I know that you don't feel proud at that time, right? That in and of itself is a humbling experience. And yet Peter is telling them to humble yourselves. So I back up a little bit. 1 Peter 3, 13 through 14. Make sure I'm doing this right. Yeah, 13 through 17. I'm putting the whole thing on the screen, but I'm not going to go over the whole verse, so don't worry, or the whole section. But 13 through 14, and who is he who will harm you if you become followers of what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you are blessed. Do not be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled. So Peter is telling them right here, do not be afraid of those who make them suffer for their faith. And during this, he talks about, he says, if you should suffer. He talks about several different instances where they're going to suffer. And 1 Peter 3:18, for Christ also suffered once for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God. So that's what Christ did, right? 1 Peter 4:1-2. Therefore, since Christ suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same mind, for he who has suffered in the flesh and ceased from sin, that he no longer should live the rest of his life in the flesh for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. So our example, the one we wish to emulate, is Christ. And because Christ suffered unjustly, you can also expect to suffer unjustly. And that is what Peter is telling them. Is this is who we emulate. This is the person that we are his disciples. We want to be like him. If we know he suffered, then we can expect to suffer also. As a matter of fact, Peter goes on to say, you shouldn't think this is strange. This shouldn't be a foreign idea to you. So let's look at 1 Peter 4:12. 12 through 16, beloved, do not think it's strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. But rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's suffering, that when his glory is revealed, oops, got ahead of myself. So when his glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy. If you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are you, for the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. On their part he is blasphemed, but on your part he is glorified. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, or as a busybody in other people's matters. Yet if someone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify in this matter. So, it's actually good that they're suffering. It almost sounds like that, doesn't it? Because it glorifies God. I mean, he says, rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's suffering. Partaking of his suffering means that you have part of his suffering, right? It says, be glad with exceeding joy. And blessed are you. On your part, he is glorified. And then he ends it with saying, let him glorify God in this matter. So, I just have a little trouble getting that together. As I mentioned earlier, right? Because he's talking to them about how much they're suffering at this point. But yet, he was talking about humbling themselves because they've got too much pride. So that's when I remember Moses. And that's where we get back to the scriptures that Van read for us. Thank you, Van. Because for me, when I look back at Moses, I have a better understanding of what Peter is saying to these Christians. But he said, you cannot see my face, for no man shall see me and live. And the Lord said, here's a place by me, and you shall stand on the rock. So it shall be while my glory passes by, that I will put you in the cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand while I pass by. That's Exodus chapter 33, verses 20 through 22. Because God here is not being oppressive to Moses. He is not humiliating Moses. God covers Moses with his hand because he loves Moses, because he cares about Moses, because he doesn't want Moses, through his interaction with God, to be killed. He did not want him to die. And God was protecting Moses. Now, put that in mind. Have that image in mind. When you're thinking about God's, or Peter telling those Christians, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God. He's not talking about oppression. He's talking about protection. He's talking about love. He's talking about how mighty God is and how that hand that is protecting us is mighty and is true and loving, and it's like a father. So in that same way, God covers those who humble themselves. Because if you don't humble yourself, then you cannot be covered by God, because you are living outside of God's will. And so you have to humble yourself. So now that I tried to fix that image of God as our Father, I have to ask myself, because he's protecting us, I have to ask myself, how do I humble myself? And then that's when I realized that this devotional, which was really good, I thought, was half the story. Because it's half the thought. Because the rest of the thought is actually on verse 7. So I'm gonna put it all together, verse 6 and 7. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. Now that word care there, I'm going to spend more time on it in just a minute, but you may have anxieties. So it's that idea of things that you're worried about, your care, your anxieties. So you want to make sure that you're casting that on God. And that's the rest of what Peter is saying here. And that kind of actually sheds a whole new light on this. Before I go any further, I'm going to stop and I'm going to talk a little bit about Peter, because what we know about Peter is interesting at this point. And it just really made me look at this scripture completely different when I realized one thing about Peter. Look at John chapter 21, verses 1 through 7. I'm going to start reading John chapter 21, verse 1 through 7. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. And in this way he showed himself: Simon Peter, Thomas called a twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, "I am going fishing." I'm going to stop here for a second and remind us, this is not before Christ came back. This is not before he was resurrected. This is not while he's sitting around, moping around, thinking, I need to go do something because I'm so sad. This is after Christ's death, burial, and resurrection. In fact, he's already showed himself to Peter, and I know this, even though it doesn't say it specifically, that I could find real quickly. It does say at the beginning, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples. So this is not the first time that... my point is that Peter knows that Jesus has risen, and he decides, I'm going to go fishing. With all the excitement going on, he wants to go fishing. I said all that to really drive home the point. Peter is a true fisherman. He needs this. It means something. And this is part of his life. It's important to him. So it's just not a pastime for him. Okay, continuing. They said to him, "We are going with you also." They went out immediately, got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. But when the morning had come, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Then Jesus said to them, "Children, have you any food?" They answered him, "No." And he said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast, and now they were not able to draw it in because of the multitudes of fish. Therefore, that disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." It is the Lord. So Peter was a fisherman. He fished with nets. I really want to hammer this point because I needed to hear it last night when I was doing my taxes. And I got that text message and found out I was going to be up here today. See, Peter isn't saying, put some of your care on God. Peter isn't saying, put most of your care on God. And here's the important thing for me. Peter isn't even saying, put all your cares on God. He didn't say that. He said, cast all your cares on God. A fisherman said that. Now, there's something different when a fisherman is saying, cast your net, cast your worries. Because a fisherman understands you don't just take a piece of your net and throw it off the side and expect something good to happen. You don't even put some of your net off the side and expect something good to happen. That's not what you do. You take all of your net, fling it. Get rid of it. That's what Peter is saying here. That's what Peter is saying here. He's saying, don't just give God some of the worry. Cast it all on him and give it all to him. Get rid of it. And don't keep any of it in the boat. Get it all out of there so that it can bring you the greatest return. Because God cares for you. Now, this phrase, cares for you, I looked through several different translations to make sure that it was right. And I only found one that said cares about you. Every other translation says cares for you. And I went back to the Greek. And then, okay, what does the Greek say? The Greek says it's an active voice. This is not caring about your football team. This is caring for. It implies a personal interest. It's more like caring for a garden, caring for a child, caring for someone who is unable to care for themselves, caring for each other. It's that act, it's that action of bringing someone around, of helping someone, of providing them help. Maybe they can't help themselves. Helping those who need it. You see here, you got different images on here. People watering the lawn, people mowing the lawn. You see a picture of a doctor caring for a patient. Oh, my bad. That's a father caring for his child. But it's that idea of caring for, tending to. It's more than just caring about. So that is why we cast all our anxieties on God, because he is caring for us. He is tending to us. And part of that is him covering us with his mighty hand and protecting us and loving us. And that's where humbling ourselves comes in. Because we want to hang on to some of our anxiety, don't we? We want to say, okay, God, you can have this one. I'll hang on to these. Because I need these. These are part of who I am. And I can't let these go because I can't trust you to take care of these. And that's what Peter is saying, that you have to humble yourself to let those go. And he says, no. He says, cast them on God. And that is very humbling, at least for me. So a couple of final thoughts from Peter. Peter says, chapter 4, verse 17. He says, for the time has come for judgment to begin at the house of God. And if it begins with us first, what will be the end of those who do not obey the gospel of God? We back up a few more verses in chapter 3. He says, there is also an antitype which now saves us, baptism. Not the removal of the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience toward God through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So if you're here today and you have not obeyed the gospel of God and put on Christ in baptism, I'm here to tell you there is no other way by which you may be saved. Only through Christ, only through the gospel, only through baptism. So if you're ready to make that step, or if you're a Christian seeking the prayers of the church, the invitation is for you today as we stand and sing.